Welcome to GamerCore, episode 5. I am DK.
I am Lewis, for 5 easy payments of whatever. You can get, what do we call it? GamerCore Premium, you know?
Oh, yeah, we should, with all access to all, content. And on
all
a
next-gen
model.
Podcasts. Yeah. We're changing models.
Yeah. So today we were thinking it was a good chance to sort of take stock and look at the next gen console situation, the gaming situation generally, because there's been some interesting developments. I guess stock is a kind of funny, maybe quasi Freudian slip type thing there, because nothing is in stock anywhere hardly, and that's driving, I think, a lot of consumer behavior. And some kind of interesting stuff that's happening in the industry generally. I guess speaking for myself first, because I'll lead off by saying I lucked out, on one of the Walmart shipments, so just as a sense of, you know, how crazy this thing is I actually wasn't even, I had sort of written off getting any kind of next gen console, and it wasn't even really on my radar. But then my primary desktop PC is running on an ancient, at this point, Haswell E CPU. It's a great chip. I mean, it was an insane chip in 2013 when I got it. But now it's really like I'm experiencing, you know, performance issues that you know, natural for an 8-year-old platform that's only sort of quasi support. It was the X99 type architecture anyway, so it was never really a consumer thing to begin with, and now it's like not supported and kind of very old. So I've kind of been in the market for a new CPU, or thinking about, you know, upgrading my system. And then as I was trying to do that, it's just everything is insane with the whole coronavirus supply chain situation, and semiconductors are just a mess, and nobody has anything. Fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know. For a minute I was feeling kind of bad because I pulled the trigger on a good deal on a 2080 Super. And I got that, but now it's just the stock situation for all kinds of GPUs are basically non-existent, way worse even than CPUs. So here I am, I'm thinking to myself, like, geez, what am I going to do with, you know, I actually do kind of need a new computer, but I don't, you know, CPUs are basically not in stock. The markups are 30-50%. GPUs are, you know, I guess with the crypto mining stuff, Ethereum mining, it's, you know, 200-300% markup. And then I saw a thing on, I forget where, I think it was in the process of, I was looking into computer components. I saw, like, on TechRadar or something, they were saying, oh, there's going to be Walmart's going to have a drop, like, tomorrow or whatever it was, for the PS5. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know, given the kind of overall stock situation we're in now, like, how much sense does it really make? Like, you know, my 2080 Super does okay for everything I need to. There's not even really anything new that I would really need it for. New releases are coming out on PS5, and there's some funny stuff with that we could talk about in a minute. But, like, on balance, when it comes specifically to gaming, because there's, you know, there's, like, productivity stuff that I actually do need a new CPU for. But, like, why would I bother really with a with you know, trying to get my hands on a new GPU if I can get my hands on a PS5, and especially if there's this drop happening, you know, okay, fine, I figured I'd be able to you know, take advantage. As you can imagine, it was not nearly that simple, and it was extremely frustrating. And I saw people on Twitter kind of live reacting to, they would basically release, it was Walmart, and they would release it in batches every 10 minutes. And they would sell out basically instantly, but it was to the point where I couldn't even, like, physically get it in my cart. Like, it was just, it wasn't even that the page was hanging. It was like, it would sell out, you know, it would, the thing would tick down to, like, whatever minutes, you know, 0 minutes or 1 second, and, like, you know, I would refresh the page, you know, F5 gang hardcore on this one, and it just wasn't going through at all. Finally, I saw somebody mentioning something about the mobile app, and what I ended up figuring out how the way to, like, sort of game the system was like, because and fortunately I had time, because it was you know, some amount every 10 minutes. What I ended up doing, and then I eventually saw other people saying that this worked for them as well. So if you're looking to do this, this is what I would personally suggest. And I think the similar kind of thing in the Target and Amazon app is go to the page with the PS5 or whatever, and then wait. Make sure that you go there when it's like when the sale is active. If it's out of stock, then it's just you have to refresh the page, and that'll ruin everything. And then, like, if you'll miss it on the first drop, the bots will get it, or whoever, you know, F5 gang somewhere else will get it. But as long as you on the page on the mobile app shows you the ability to add to cart, like you can press the add to cart button and it'll just say, like, oh, sorry, we couldn't add to cart. Keep it there. And then when the next batch comes up in, like, you know, 10 minutes or whatever, then hit the add to cart over and over again. Just spam it. And that's what I did. And I was able to secure a PS5, but that was only the beginning of the drama, because apparently Walmart massively oversold their actual supply that they had. It ended up working out. It was the initial ship date was supposed to be like a month from when that happened, and they missed even that extremely long ass in the future ship date. So when I got on their case and customer support, they ended up giving me first $50 and then $100 off, on the, thing. So I got a discount PS5, which I was very, yeah, I was like, I'm not complaining, I guess, ultimately, but, yeah.
Oh God. All right. So that's nerd shit. Let me break into it more. If you want to talk scarcity, have you ever heard of King Sid?
No, I don't know what that is.
So King Sid is a YouTube channel run by an erudite young Negro gentleman on the West Coast.
Oh,
and
I see.
He hosts what he calls "Last to Get Knocked Out in the Hood" challenges.
All right.
He sets up about 20 cones in a circle, goes somewhere in some LA neighborhood usually, but travels, and he has a prize, usually a couple $1,000s, but of late it's been PS5s.
Oh, and shit.
Demand is so high. There is one amazing video where this white boxer kid shows up and just beats
the shit out of the Negroes. That's amazing.
For 22 minutes to get a PS5.
That is fantastic.
And, you know, fuck your Walmart.
Extremely around, like, doing, yeah, F5 gang, like, nerd shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
go beat up
Negroes in South LA. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And
it's great. They all got gloves on. There's a cop present for some reason, or a security guard of some kind.
I mean, I can think of a couple reasons.
Yeah. It's very much. It has. You ever seen the Chappelle Show dice game?
Yes, yes.
It's big vibe to that.
Gotcha. That's hilarious.
And it's also great because every time it's in this video, it's the white guy, he just beats ass.
So where's the supplier getting his PS5s from? That's what I want to know.
He's only done like two or three of these.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think he's
all
just
right.
getting what everybody else is. Or
and so he's just like sponsoring massive Negro fights because he's like, yeah. I got some PS5s, I might as well, like, this is going to be good content. I'm sure it's great content.
Oh, it's wonderful content. And the great thing is, it's also like, whenever it's like two black dudes fighting, neither of them can fight, and it's... And like if it's not an obvious winner, it's like done by crowd noise, and of course it's like a crowd of like 30-ish people, and it's very much disputed, and they'll try to like it becomes a real fight very often, because the fighters will dispute the crowd's findings, and there's a lot of like half chimping and semi chimping. They're great videos.
What's the name of the channel again? Wonderful.
King Sid, I'll DM
King
it
Sid,
to you
now. Yeah, yeah. All right, we'll put it in the show notes or something. That's hilarious. Yeah.
So
yeah. So that's another way to solve this problem, I guess. Yeah. So anyway, the PS5 did eventually arrive, and I've been sort of toying around with it a little bit. I haven't had a whole lot of time, but I do have, I guess, a couple of observations. First is you, my friend, need to you get to cash in clout chips, like clout chips galore. I didn't realize this, or I guess it hadn't. I mean, maybe people who were more, you know, because again, the PS5 really just wasn't even on my radar until I was faced with this computer problem, and then kind of had one fall more or less into my lap. Sony's making a big push, both Sony and Microsoft, actually, for a subscription to their respective online services. In particular, I don't know as much about the Microsoft Game Pass. I know that it's got a pretty big library generally. I will say the PS5 comes with like a PS Plus collection, essentially, if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber. So if you have the monthly subscription to the which allows for you to play multiplayer, which probably you're going to get anyway, it includes basically a greatest hits library of PS4 games, everything from like Ratchet and Clank, Horizon Zero Dawn, Bloodborne, Persona 5, The Last of Us, I mean, just like pretty much everything that you would have wanted. And granted, for a lot of people, it's The Last Guardian. It's mostly it's stuff that, and I mention that because I want to talk about Japan Studio stuff at some point. But mostly stuff that probably most people have already played. But you know, typically, I mean, certainly in my case, there were a few titles that I hadn't. And I had actually been sort of like, oh, do I, you know, shell out money for, you know, whatever. It's not expensive, you know, $15-$20 at this point, but for like, you know, the most recent God of War. Well, the most recent God of War is part of this collection. And it's, you know, free for you to keep as long as you are a subscriber. Not only that, but they're giving away essentially launch titles. I think it was last month they had Control, which was okay. It's like a 2019 game, I guess, but it's a pretty good game actually. I like Remedy shooters. We should talk about Mad Max at some point Max Payne at some point on this program. Control Ultimate Edition, which was a launch title for the PS5. The PS5 version of that was included in the PS Plus membership. This month, which was like kind of pushed me over the. There were two things that pushed me over the edge on signing up, because I had let my subscription lapse. I didn't really play multiplayer PS4 hardly at all. I played a little bit a couple years back, and then hadn't really at all, you know, in a while. But the day that I was hooking my PS5 up to the TV was the last day that Final Fantasy VII Remake was included, which I had basically already worth the price of admission, because it's a $60 game and it's a $60 membership for the whole year. I'm like, okay, well, that makes it at this point a no-brainer. And then I saw that the new Oddworld game, Soulstorm, was going, and not only was that functionally a launch title for the PS5, like the day that it was available for PS5, it was a day one available for free to PlayStation Plus subscribers. And I've long been a fan of Oddworld. I didn't play the spin-off non-Abe games for Xbox. But I just love this. The setting always captivated me as a child. I think it's got a lot going on. I think it's a very interesting series in a lot of ways. It does this. Off air that you hadn't played any of them. Are you at least like kind of broadly familiar with them, or?
Yeah, I've seen like the videos of gameplay of it and things.
Sure.
It's got a very distinct kind of stylistic.
Very, very distinct thing going on there. Art design. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, so like, I mean, there's a lot going on with it. Some of it's, I think, quite good and interesting. Some of it's a little boring and kind of dumb. It's sort of centered around a certain kind of critique of capitalism, but it ends up being very anti-Semitic, kind of unintentionally, I guess. Or they're trying to do it like a guilt, like, you know, it's a kind of quasi sci-fi, quasi steampunk, you know, aliens in a Victorian Gilded Age era kind of industrial capitalist hellscape. Except for the main bad guys, the villains, called the Gluckens. Obviously, sort of like gluttons is sort of what they're playing with. There's, you know, cigar chomping, but they're like extremely ugly. And I didn't quite, you know, I don't know that this was ever really explicit in the earlier games, but in Soulstorm, it's now like canon that the uber evil capitalists in charge of everything, who control everything with money and stiff all their workers and exploit the environment and exploit their labor force and are just generally awful, terrible people, literally don't have arms. They literally don't. They just like waddle around on their feet, and their suits are like essentially designed for them to have. Just they don't have arms. And I'm like, I don't think you're going, like, I don't think Lorne Lanning, the you know, the kind of head of this, the brain, you know, the guy who came up with this setting and everything, I don't think he knows. I'm sure he thinks of them as sort of a stand-in for wasps, but like, oh my god, it's just the very kind of like, I don't know, it's an interesting question to me how, like, what they're gonna have to do, or how the sort of game press response, or maybe they're just going to ignore it, but it strikes me just as very, very, very anti-Semitic, essentially.
Yeah, no, I didn't know there were that much going on in Oddworld games. I thought, like, aren't they like just kind of puzzle games or puzzle platformers?
So it's well, I don't know if I'd say just that. They're kind of a take on Prince of Persia, if you ever played that, like the old school Apple II game of which is also, I guess, a kind of puzzle platformer. But Prince of Persia really is just a pure puzzle game. No, Oddworld is like it's doing a Prince of Persia platforming thing with it's kind of quasi stealth, but the main kind of conceit is. And this, I guess, extends through. As I said, I haven't played Munch's Odyssey and The Wrath of the Stranger, so I can't speak to those. But the main entries in the series, basically, you are you're a vulnerable character. You can sort of jump a little bit and climb a little bit, and you have to sort of sneak by the enforcers of this like very exploitative. Environmentally destructive industrial capitalist system that is like it's literally. I mean, oh yeah, that's the other thing. They're like, so the opening of the first game is on the original PlayStation is like basically the there. It takes place at a farm, Rupture Farms, and the main character is a janitor, and he's like reminiscing about, oh, we used to have, you know, all these different like meat products that we would eat from all the different animals in this like area, but we've killed all the animals and eaten all of their animal, you know, like they we've completely, you know, depopulated all the wildlife in that area. Well, it's kind of unclear, you know, but whether it's local to the farm or, you know, on quote Oddworld. Generally, it's whatever. It doesn't really matter. So he stumbles across. There's like a meeting they're having. The Gluckens. He's like cigar chomping. Villains, where they're planning. They have an idea for a new meat product, which is him, which is them, which is their race, the race of Muttikans. Actually, they changed the pronunciation. I noticed in the original they were called Muttikans. Now they're like Mudakans or something. Anyway, doesn't really matter. So the kind of central gameplay conceit is in addition to your kind of general weak platforming and ability to kind of sneak past guards and the like, you have the ability to chant and possess, certain enemies, primarily the kind of, machine gun wielding guards, and get them and control them yourself. And then you can either, it's a very funny effect. It never really gets old of like, basically, like your mental powers cause them to explode in a, you know, slurry of blood and guts. Very, very funny, and he kind of giggles. The whole thing has got a very cool and interesting, I think, aesthetic of like, you know, it's kind of cutesy but also extremely violent. And anyway, so your chant is good for two main things. One is possessing guards, and the other is opening these portals and allowing your fellow Muttikans to escape. And so there's this whole kind of elaborate system. mostly work. So, you know, it's sort of simplistic of you can communicate with them and get them to follow, you know, you say, hello, follow me, wait here, and, you know, try to guide them to safety, often through, you know, traps and guards and all this kind of stuff. So no, it's not just like, it's not just platforming. It's also kind of like, I mean, the puzzling aspect of the puzzles are often like, I guess that, that's all kind of essentially optional. The idea is you like, if you want to approach it as a pure platformer and just get your dude to safety, then you can do that. But, and it's a lot easier. You don't have to worry about, you know, trying to find all these mudikins lying around everywhere and far less getting them to safety without getting them killed. But then if you do that, of course, you get the bad ending. And that sort of, like, there's this, it's an interesting sort of, I think it's a good example of gameplay and narrative working together, because the narrative is like, you know, your people have been enslaved and are about to be essentially cannibalized or whatever, you know, eaten, used as meat product by the villains. And so rather than simply trying to save your own skin, you are, you know, sort of tasked with becoming a leader to your people and, you know, leading them to safety so that they can eventually, I guess the idea is, rise up against their kind of evil capitalist overlords. As I said, very kind of like, so unintentionally like anti-Semitic. I was going to say, exactly. It's unintentionally extremely anti-Semitic.
Goy
Simulator. Goy Simulator 1999, yes. Yeah, and they're in control of the whole kind of, they control the media, they control the guns, they control the military, they control, you know, everything. And you have, all you have is essentially like the strength of your will and the righteousness of your cause. Like yeah. So, anyway, there's also some stuff. I mean, there's that aspect to it. And I definitely think that's there. I'm not like making this up, and I would defend this kind of interpretation, but for kind of like, I don't know, there's also kind of a weird like tribal thing, like with the chant, for example. There's this quasi African, quasi Native American vibe to some of the stuff that gets more pronounced actually in the PS5. Like Soulstorm is a remake of the second main game in the series, and it's way more like, it's way more advanced. Like on the original PlayStation games, they were strictly two-dimensional and only ever had essentially like, some environments were essentially in multiple screens, the way that some old games had this thing of like, you know, transitioning scenes through screens and in the part of the same kind of overarching environment, and enemies will follow you from one screen to another within a particular environment. It's quite rudimentary. With this entry, which is a remake of the second in the series, they just did New and Tasty, which is a kind of similar remake of the first game in the series. They do this cool thing where it's like, they call it, I guess it's marketing, but whatever, 2.9D, where they like, with the camera swings around and the environments themselves kind of like, as you're proceeding down a path, it could be, you know, you're facing the camera is facing Abe, the main character, at like a, you know, face on at a 90-degree angle, and then as he proceeds through the environment, like around a curve, for example, the camera curves around with him, and you can see, you know, you can it essentially morphs around. So it's still all happening on a two-dimensional plane for the most part. There's some bugs related to this too. It's a little bit unfinished, but whatever. It's quite good. The cinematics are incredible. I actually quite like the story overall. And 80% of the time the gameplay really works. Like it all kind of fits very nicely together. And it gives you a variety of ways. In particular, Soulstorm gives you a variety of ways to approach, you know, because there's like crafting mechanics, so you can like make like a Molotov cocktail or a smoke grenade or certain kind of projectile weapons and approach situations in different ways. What am I trying to say? The thing with the PS5 is it really shows off. I think it's intended as, and this is part of why they had it as you know, part of the PS Plus subscription and de facto was a kind of quasi launch title. It looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous, and the PS5 does a very, very, very good job of, you know, providing 60 frames per second, 4K. I know that there's some, like, I guess that I think to, at a at a technical level, the PS5 is capable of up to, if your TV supports it, up to 120 hertz 4K. But I don't, like, maybe this gets us into, like, our next topic, I don't think that most games, especially most kind of graphically intense games, they're already struggling. The PS5, basic PS5, the disc edition, which I believe has a more powerful, components than the digital only edition, much like the Xbox Series X versus the Series S. With graphically intense games, it's already struggling to hit 60 frames a second at 4K, to the extent that I haven't played it yet. I don't know if I will, but apparently the new Spider-Man game has essentially graphics options where you can, you know, toggle, like, how much graphical fidelity do you have? Like, do you want essentially performance versus graphical quality, with, like, different settings in that? And you can even, I believe, turn ray tracing on and off, which, like, now at that point, we're really, like, I don't understand what, at a kind of even theoretical level now, is differentiating console from PC gaming.
Yeah, and also, that also is kind of a betrayal of the whole console social contract, if you will, where you don't have to mess with these things. You just get, you know, games that work.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah.
You shouldn't have to choose because you bought a gaming machine. And, yeah.
It's supposed to take all those kind of considerations away from you and just, like, yeah, you know, buy Nintendo, put cartridge in Nintendo, play game. Like, you're not supposed to be messing with, like, anything beyond that. I very much doubt, this is possible, but I don't think Nintendo's going to go down that road. I think they made it pretty clear, like, you know, they have other considerations and they're not after graphical horsepower. They want fun experience and fast frame rates and fluid, smooth controls, and, you know, everything else is kind of secondary. But yeah, for Sony and Microsoft, it's really kind of wild. Yeah.
So getting into wild, do you want to discuss my clout?
Yes, 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 yes. That's where we're going with this. Yes. Sorry, that was like a long ass digression. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, you should discuss my clout, because if I say it, it's going to sound aggrandizing.
So I don't remember. It was back maybe 6 months ago or so. It was a while ago. But, like, you know, when we were first kind of starting out, we were, you know, thinking about, like, how the console, you know, this console generation was going to go. And I was, I guess, I assumed, wrongly as it turns out, that it would play out more or less the same as kind of previous console generations. You called, like, really, really well, like, this, that basically there's an overarching transition to a subscription model, not just for the game libraries as PlayStation Plus or something, or Microsoft Game Pass, but for the consoles themselves. And I don't know if I mentioned this at the they also had another offer I saw. I wasn't able to get it for the Xbox. I also didn't really care that much because there's nothing really on Xbox. I mean, the few quasi exclusives that I care about are all on PlayStation right now anyway. But there were briefly had an availability, a drop of Xbox Series consoles, but they were exclusively for people who were signing up for Microsoft Game Pass. The thing is, and not just for the Game Pass, sorry, but because apparently, I guess I didn't realize this, Microsoft itself now has a program where you pay a flat monthly fee of, like, I think $30 or $50, depending on which console you're talking about, and you get the console and you get Microsoft Game Pass together. The thing is, they're not charging interest and they're not charging a premium. Meaning, like, so whatever you added up, whatever it is, like, I think it's like $800 or something. If you, over a 3-year period, that you would be paying off this loan, essentially, it's a small time loan, microfinance. It's whatever, $500 for the console, and then whatever $240 or whatever it is for the $300 for the subscription. Maybe it's 5 years. I don't remember. And then you divide that into monthly payments. like, strictly speaking, from a kind of, you know, put on your, you know, whatever, Murray Rothbard economist hat, like, because you're not having to pay interest, there's literally no reason, economically why you wouldn't, like, why wouldn't you just get the Xbox with this, as long as you would want the service anyway, which realistically you probably would, because that's how you play multiplayer anyway, why wouldn't you do that? Right? Like, I mean, it just makes sense. And what that ends up doing is creating a massive incentive for people to have what amounts to, because you don't own, at that point, you don't own your console. I mean, I guess once you paid it off completely, then you could own it. But I don't even think they have a way, there's no mechanism, as I understand it, for you to, like, pay it off all at once. You just have to, you are on the hook for monthly payments. But so what? As long as you can make them. I mean, this raises a kind of funny question, I guess, of, like, what about, you know, like, can you imagine, like, repo men going through the ghetto trying to, like, collect people's Xboxes who are delinquent on their payments? Like, that's not ideal.
This is also going to destroy the kind of hood economy of stolen games.
Oh, yeah.
Because presumably once it's stolen, it's bricked, right?
Yeah, I presume you could they could remote brick the console if the, you know, BIOS is like, oh, because this console is stolen. Yeah.
Because they're not going to, like, let you keep, let's say, for instance, you stop making your monthly payments.
Yeah,
they're not going to like repossess your Xbox. Hilarious as the premise is.
I just think that would be so funny, but yeah, you're probably right.
They'll
just
remote brick it. DRM only, obviously. Yeah. And they'll just brick it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, the whole thing is that it's also in this. If you get into this ecosystem where you pay a monthly fee, you also get the promise is that once they upgrade to the next gen like intra gen, the 1.5 version, they will then be able to exchange it at no cost.
Well, that was I didn't know this at first, but I because as I said, I haven't played it, but I learned about it because I found an article that was basically saying, like, I want the PS5 Pro. Like, you'll get the art, and the writer was saying, like, don't get me wrong, I'm very lucky and grateful that I got my PS5, but I hate having to make these trade-offs, and I just want the PS5 Pro, and, like, just assuming that it's going to exist. And of course it's going to exist. And yeah, you know, once you're sort of used to paying Sony and or Microsoft, you know, $50 a month for the service that includes the console and the multiplayer service and access to this, you know, library of games, like, yeah, I mean, you know, why, like, what at that point is your incentive not to just keep paying the $50, send back your old machine, maybe even get a little trade-in credit? I mean, functionally, I guess I never took those kinds of deals because I was talking about the beginning of the program. I have, I've had two laptops for now over, like, basically about almost 20 years between the two of them. This CPU is running for 8 years, and I tend to keep phones a while too, maybe not quite as long, but definitely longer than the 2-year upgrade cycle. But I know the big service providers, cell phone service providers, basically offer people packages that include, like, essentially insurance on the phone as well as some kind of upgrade, you know, every year, every 2 years or whatever, to the point where you basically never, like, really own your phone, but for the kind of person who's into that, you also don't really care because, you know, you just keep getting a new phone every year, every 2 years. And for the kind of person, it, you know, makes a certain amount of sense. And I guess the phones are more expensive than the consoles. So, like, I guess if they worked out the economics of it, how to, you know, just keep getting a constant revenue stream and get people hooked on this kind of, like, microfinance credit, I guess it works out for them. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, there is, unfortunately for them, if the downside, well, obviously it won't happen until the supply increases, but there's going to be a pretty big incentive to, like, game the system by getting your grandma to buy a membership in this microloan thing, then renege on it after a month, get her thing bricked, then you go in, take all those expensive components that are worth more than the machine right now,
right,
and mine,
yes,
crypto. Well, which is going to be interesting how they deal with that. I'm sure you can jailbreak these components in some manner. I'm sure they're locked to the system, but I mean,
well, I don't know. I mean, I think I'd have to look into it more. My understanding is that they are running on basically off-the-shelf AMD components. Both consoles, both CPUs and GPUs are off-the-shelf, maybe slightly modified, and it'd be to the extent that
I'm sure
modified.
There's some firmware in there to prevent you from cannibalizing them.
Yeah,
but that's. But
that's a trivial problem for
there, yeah. If there's a will, there's a way.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Especially when the economic incentive is there.
I hope they lose a lot of money.
I hope so too. That'd be funny.
I hope they lose a lot of. I. Yeah.
Well. Yeah. I mean, they're
Which would be, how great would that be?
That would be great. It would be very, very good. It would be. It would be funny as fuck too. But yeah, that would be. Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is kind of. I don't know. It strikes me as predatory, and maybe that's just. I don't know. My own. I don't know. It's just like maybe this.
Yeah, it's not. There's like the Calvinist instinct is very anti this, but
Feel like you buy something, you should own it. I don't like credit. I don't like debt. I don't like putting people in debt. I definitely don't like the idea. This is probably also in part a generational thing. You know, I grew up, like my sense of the internet and of like the technology world generally is very much still one of like, you know, you buy the component, the license, the whatever, and you own it. That's yours. You know, that's your property. This whole thing, like, so, you know, you buy Microsoft Word, like you own a license for Microsoft Word for life and it should work forever. Now, I mean, there's some kind, you know, there was always sort of ways around, you know, that Microsoft would try to make money and, you know, they'd sell new operating systems and then, you know, previous versions of Word wouldn't be compatible. But like now, I mean, I remember a few years back, they started transitioning to a essentially subscription model for Office. I don't think Adobe hardly, I had to twist some arms essentially to get Adobe to sell me some software that was like a standalone product that I didn't have to pay as a monthly subscription for, and I don't even know if they do that anymore. A couple years after I went through those hoops to accomplish that, I mean, maybe, I'm not sure, but yeah, it's like, you know, it's clear that generally speaking, all these big companies have made the, you know, decision and the realization that they make more money charging people monthly. I resent that, and I think the more that is done to fuck with them on that score, the better.
There's also is like the very, Ali obviously is the first generation. It probably will become more predatory, but the current proposition of value is pretty decent because presumably you're buying a game a month, right?
Well, that's the thing is, and it's not even just that they're giving you like, sorry, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're giving you a game a month. One of the big issues I think with consoles or historically has been I saved my money to buy this $500 machine and there are no games out and I don't have money to buy new games because I spent all my money up front on this console. So it allows players to buy more games when they get it because they're not paying a massive upfront cost. And they can also just access all these games that are free with the service. So in terms of, as a person who enjoys video games, there's a great use case for the kind of gym membership model here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, this iteration makes sense, but like, you know, they're going to start charging interest on these loans, right? Like, obviously, at some point, they're going to be charging interest on these loans. The, you know, offerings are going to be less generous. The back catalog access is going to be less generous, right?
I'm curious to read the fine print. Like, if you miss a payment, does interest then kick in? Things like that.
Yeah.
I can see something like that.
Yeah,
especially.
Definitely. I could see
and
that.
And also,
and I'm sure it's like 30%, right? Sorry, go on. What?
And also, if you do get your system, like say you miss your payments, you get your system bricked, presumably they will then like sell that debt to a predatory company that will try to.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, kind of what it is. That's probably going to happen, you know, and I still think that there's a lot of ways that this can be exploited, possibly, like, let's say, oh, I have my Xbox subscription box, I report it stolen, because it's a lease, is it Microsoft's problem that it's a, something like that, do I stop making the payments, you know, like, does Microsoft have some obligation to help recover it, because they can presumably see where the next user is, like, the thief, or the current owner, is going to be...
Yeah, they're going to have an IP address, right? Yeah.
So, does Microsoft have an obligation to, like, hey, you know where the guy is. You can't stick with his bill. You know, there brings into, like, some legal questions. I'm curious to get a copy. I wonder if we could find a copy of the fine print and see what's in there. Because, also, I want to know what... I'm not hyper debt averse. I've gotten a debt before. I've bought, you know, some things on short credit, mostly like firearm stuff, because I have a low time preference or high time, whatever, the bad time preference sometimes. And I want nice things. And all those are like, they come out of, like, it's always a company in Tennessee or based in LLC in Tennessee because it's a criminal charge there to miss payments or something like that. There's this. Also, I want to know how they're legally setting it up for. I like the value proposition. I'm not going to dive right into it, even though
I
don't see a reason not to. I'm definitely going to wait and see how. I'm going to let, you know, Tyrone Watermelon be the beta user here, and
Tyrone Watermelon Borzoi. Borzoi's getting him set up right.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, no, I don't know. I think it just speaks generally. It speaks to me like to two things here, which is like, or a couple of things, or you know, one is the kind of broader financialization of the economy, which, you know, you financialize Wall Street, you financialize industry. Now you're financializing people's like $500 consumer purchases, which is kind of just crazy. Then it's you know, specifically in terms of electronic entertainment, I guess another kind of related phenomenon is or the use of Xbox and PlayStation as a hub for Netflix and HBO and various kind of streaming services. So like, in addition to being like sort of edging on the space of a desktop gaming PC, they're also kind of taking over the role of a media PC. And I mean, it really makes me think, because as I started by talking about my thing, you know, I there was a time where like PC gaming was really its own separate ecosystem from console gaming. And even in the consoles themselves, largely for technological and technical reasons, as far as like, you know, the Sega Genesis had a chip that was designed, I don't know if it was designed by Sega, it was definitely commissioned by Sega, and it was his own, you know, bespoke chip that was different, substantially architecturally different from the chip in the Super Nintendo. I mean, different enough that, like, while you could sort of kind of get, like, quote, the same game releasing on both platforms, there were inevitable differences, sometimes quite subtle, not always. I mean, you know, I don't want to rehash the great original console wars, but veterans of the original console wars will know that, you know, I mean, the people who are like sort of on top of this stuff, like, it wasn't as simple as, like, oh, Super Nintendo is better, or Genesis is better, or, like, Nintendo is better, and Master System was better. Like, because of the architecture of the chips and the systems themselves, and they were so different, like, there were different things about them. Please, yeah.
Yeah, like, I can get better sound on one console than another console. Like, things are very, very, like...
Yeah, princes. And like, and
this
like
one
I think
can do full orchestral music. This
exactly
one can do beat bloops.
And sometimes it was like on a game by game basis of like, you know, this one is better on this system and this other one is better on this other system because of, you know, whatever, like the way that it was programmed and how that interfaces with the, like, you know, the architecture of the chips and so on and the sound chips and all this kind of stuff. So it was really like each was its own ecosystem, and then you still got some of that through, like, I guess the PlayStation 2 original Xbox era, because then they were also still, you know, bespoke chips. Now everything is running on, you know, x86 64 architecture pretty much. I know there's some talk of moving stuff to ARM, but even that, you know, ARM, it's not, I guess I'm not a super expert, and I know it's different from x64 x86 64, but it's still like, it's close enough that we're not talking like the difference between the PS3 cell processor versus a whatever. Like it's just something. We're now at a point where like we have pretty much the exact same software deploying on functionally identical platforms, like hardware platforms, even though they're branded differently. And in terms of the ecosystem that you're buying into, it's mostly like timed exclusives. Of a little bit, you still get stuff like first party, like where Microsoft, I guess they bought Bethesda and ZeniMax. So I guess that, you know, it's an interesting question. Like, will the next Elder Scrolls and/or Fallout come out on PlayStation? You know, stay tuned. That seems like a prime case for a timed exclusive where it will eventually come out, but maybe not until some time has passed. Other stuff, I guess, for now, Gears of War, you know, exists on Windows. There's nothing technically preventing it from existing on PlayStation, but it doesn't exist on PlayStation, and similarly with, you know, Final Fantasy VII Remake and some Square Enix stuff, because I guess Sony is a big shareholder or something. What were you going to say?
Also, it's Comms Tech taking over the kind of media piece thing is PC thing is kind of it's kind of already happened. The Xbox 360 had Internet Explorer and YouTube applications and Hulu.
I did not know that. Yeah.
So this kind of already happened. Like, there's a lot of people who still have 360s or Xbox Ones as YouTube, wow, HBO, Hulu machines,
mm-hmm,
and that's a pretty viable use case because it's a lot. So smart TVs kind of suck.
Smart TVs are terrible. I have a smart TV, and I kind of wish it was a dumb TV. You know, I mean, the screen is beautiful. But,
yeah, and you get a much better interface through a Netflix app on your 360 or Xbox One, or so. It's hard. It's becoming like consoles are kind of becoming a thing you have. It's basically it's kind of like an very similar use case like an iPad. You know. Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of an iPad on your TV for a lot of people, which I would think would blunt the need to upgrade somewhat in a lot of ways. But
oh, it definitely
obviously
does.
It hasn't. But I don't think it's just the pandemic that caused a shortage of these things. I think there's a lot of demand. I think part of that is just the how mainstream video gaming is at this point, that it's just a thing you do if you're an adult male under the age of 40. So it's even a hair of that is going to restrict supply. Also, the next gen consoles, like the Switch, is technically in this generation.
Yeah,
although and the it feels Switch like was plagued gen. By shortages.
Yeah, early
it
on,
does
especially.
Kind of, but it was plagued by shortages, and that's then true. When the pandemic hit, it was out of stock again.
Yeah.
So the hardware demand has kind of, I think consoles are going to. There's always been talk of like there will be no consoles, or consoles will fall at some point. I think the despite all the PC similarities, I think it's basically proven that consoles are going to be around forever because they're just easier, and people like the iPad on the TV of use.
I think from my perspective, what I would say is PCs won the argument. Essentially, in terms of what's the how are you going to make it work architecturally? What is the kind of broad, you know,
libertarians won the argument too. That didn't work. It doesn't matter who wins. Like intellectuals, the intellectual case doesn't really matter in a lot of ways.
Sure, but no. But what I mean specifically is okay. But the idea
going
of like,
on there.
Okay, but you're going to have like an AMD or you have a major manufacturer CPU, major manufacturer GPU, essentially mainstream components like in terms of like what a, you know, gaming, like modern and both the previous generation and this generation, PlayStations and Xboxes, have been gaming PCs in all but name. Like, that's just functionally what they are. They're just able to, like, you know, their components are standardized, and so and because the, you know, Sony and Microsoft are giant corporations, they're able to sell them for cheap because they're buying essentially off the shelf components just in massive quantities, and so they get, you know, special rates from AMD and Intel, and I don't think there's an NVIDIA in any of these, but it would be, I'm sure NVIDIA would be able to do the same thing. So in that sense, that's what I mean in the sense of like PC gaming PCs won the argument in terms of like how are we going to interface with these games. But in terms of like, you know, what the funny thing about that is, it ends up being like, you know, I again, certainly for my own self, like, whereas once upon a time, you know, the value proposition of a PC is like, you know, it's just a kind of all-in-one device and it does all these things, and consoles are really, you know, the games on consoles were much more in a sense for kids typically, and again, in all kinds of senses. Pretty much everything these days, including just, you know, in small time indie releases, is released on just about everything. And where, you know, yeah, there's always, I guess, you know, there's like League of Legends or something, and a few things that are really kind of do require a mouse and keyboard, or at least, you know, at least for first person shooters, you're always going to do better with a mouse and keyboard than with a controller. It's not like you can't enjoy even high level multiplayer, you know, tournament level play of you know, Call of Duty on consoles. And I know that there are like leagues where you have to play on a controller. Even, you know, it's like you're playing on PCs, but you're playing on a controller because that's standardized, because that's, you know, to make it fair for everyone essentially. And so then what that creates is a situation where, like, even though functionally contemporary consoles are gaming PCs in everything but name, in a lot of ways they end up making the gaming PC kind of obsolete. Like, to it's like, okay, well, what at this point is the point of, you know, owning or running a powerful gaming PC? It's like, okay, well, if you, number one, if you want to be on the bleeding edge of the graphics, if you, you know, must have the latest and greatest, you know, ray tracing GPU and see things in a level of graphical detail that's not quite ever going to be there for consoles, then sure, okay, that's one, you know, use case, I guess. Another is for stuff that can only kind of exist on PC, you know, certain kind of real-time strategy games and League of Legends and stuff like that. Okay. Other than that, I'm increasingly sort of like at a loss to, you know, come up with like, well, why, like, what is the point, you know, or what are you really doing?
You get to pay extra money to fuck with drivers.
Yeah, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And then,
like, that's like not. I went through the experience of like trying to find what was the driver first. I was playing some map game on my PC, some older map game, and my drivers were like too updated, so I had to like try to find the 2015 drivers. I was like,
yeah,
on like forums,
right? Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is the point?
What is the point of this? And then it's especially when, and that actually drives home like the kind of bigger other second big kind of picture point I wanted to make, which was like, increasingly, I feel like I'm not even interested in new releases. Like, it would be one thing if I wanted to play the latest and greatest, newest release in the best possible graphical settings on the RTX 3090 or whatever, assuming I can even find one, right? But like, I could tell you for myself, the last major release I had any level of interest in, and I probably will purchase and play at some point, is the new Doom. Valheim looks kind of interesting, but I know Doom is on consoles. I presume Valheim. I only look. I believe it's Valheim is or will be on consoles. Valheim, that's the Varg simulator, right? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with it. I haven't played it though, obviously.
Early access Windows and Linux on Steam. Yeah, I guess it may or may not be coming to consoles. We'll see. I have to presume at some point it'll be on consoles. But But yeah, I mean, okay, you see, so that's like maybe the one exception. But is it worth it to me to like? So here I am, sort of trying to like, I'm in a situation now where I'm like trying to, you know, it's PC building time, and I, you know, because I do actually have to upgrade my CPU, but like in terms of the kind of system I want to build, like, you know, am I going to build something around being able to play, like being able to play what exactly, and is it going to be worth my time and my money? When I can get, you know, okay, I may have to deal with a certain kind of performance versus fidelity slider, which as opposed to like if I'm willing to pour, I don't know, $2,000-$3,000 into a game NBC, I wouldn't have to make quite that trade off. Like, is it worth it when I've already owned the PS5 and I can get the game for free through PS Plus or whatever? You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just sort of, I don't know. It's a very kind of weird time. To be a PC gamer, or at least have been a PC gamer, and primarily as opposed to a console gamer, because I just, you know, especially with these prices out of control and stock, you know, unavailable and nothing's anywhere, and it's just like, okay, well, you know, I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I think the new consoles are going to be. Like, so we also are kind of reaching, obviously we'll probably look back on these graphics as not quite as good as graphics in 10 years, obviously, but at a certain point we are definitely hitting diminishing returns into how good things
I'm not look. Even sure that's true. Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, well, the thing is, in order for graphics to get, I mean, they're already, I think art departments are already by far the biggest for AAA, quote unquote AAA releases. That's where all the money goes. You know, the biggest chunk of the budget goes.
And also the thing is, I haven't really given a fuck about graphics.
That's the thing.
Since,
well, I enjoy
the 360, and I don't.
Right.
Like, my favorite game on the last generation was State of Decay, which is like looks like a late, like looks like an early Xbox 360 game, but it played real fun, and it was really even kind of glitchy, but. And I just enjoy the gameplay loop enough that, like, the graphics are so secondary that it's essentially irrelevant to my.
I had a similar thing with, I mean,
enjoyment.
Oddworld, like, yeah, the latest Oddworld. I mentioned how good it looked, but like, I mean, a lot of the, you know, it I'm sure it would look fine on a less. I mean, you wouldn't have maybe as many, you know, NPCs running around in certain scenes or, you know, same kind of particle effects or stuff like that. But, you know, it doesn't. It's not like it's super demanding, except in cutscenes, and who cares that much, you know.
Yeah. Notably, I would say that the new Doom games kind of are. They're not to say that they don't look good, but they're not like pushing the bleeding edge of graphics at all.
No, not
right?
at all.
But the gameplay is fun enough.
The Doom 2016 was fucking awesome, and I'm psyched to play that. I just haven't had time.
And
yet.
It looked great.
Yeah.
It looked great, and it wasn't on the bleeding edge, and I never cared, and I haven't. I think the like. How much power do you want to put into like Skyrim to make it look better? It's like,
right.
It looks good enough.
Yeah, that's you know. And that's the thing. It's like and then versus like, putting those resources elsewhere or just not spending those resources on that or you know putting them into design or something. It's like I like the trailer for Hyper Light Drifter more than the actual game in a lot of ways. I mean, not to say I enjoyed it, but Hyper Light Drifter had beautiful pixel art. You mentioned on the beat 'em up episode, what was that Russian Soviet ish?
Mother Russia Bleeds.
Mother Russia Bleeds.
Or did I not mention it? I think I didn't mention it, but that came up.
Yeah, well,
we'll
anyway,
talk about it after.
We'll talk about it after, I guess, after the show. Yeah, Mother Russia Bleeds. For those of you who are interested, this is sort of. Capstone on our beat 'em up episode, like check that out. Maybe it looks super cool. I haven't had a chance to play it, but I mean I love that kind of pixel art. Like, it's cool, it's amazing what you can do with pixel art that's like pixel art but not bound by the requirements that created pixel art in the first place. Maybe there's a kind of overwhelming element of nostalgia there, but it also I think just kind of works as, you know, artistic design as art direction, at least in certain applications, and not to say that everything has to be pixel art, but like it works. Or one of my favorite games is Frozen Synapse, which is like extremely basic, rudimentary kind of 3D graphics, barely any textures, But it just has such great systems and works so well in so many other ways. It's just a very engrossing tactical strategy game that, like, you know, there's so many things you can do other than spend $500 million paying a bunch of, you know, 20-somethings to work 18 hours a day churning out, like, high-resolution textures for the latest Assassin's Creed or whatever. Yeah. Like,
I think about the games I've enjoyed the most in, like, the PS or the PS4, Xbox One generation, it's, like, Massive Chalice, Cuphead. These games don't look...
Cuphead, like there's, yeah. Yeah.
And it's so divorced from, like... Basically, I think, like, how much better can a game look than, like, Call of Duty Black Ops, right?
I mean, I'm sure with, you know, you say that now. I remember saying similar things, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Maybe not 20 years ago. Definitely 10 years ago. Yeah, no, I mean, I get your point. And you're, I think you're, I mean, definitely you compare, you know, Call of Duty, World War II to, like, you know, or to Modern Warfare, you know, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, like, you know, there's definitely, we're way on the far right end of the diminishing returns curve as far as all that's concerned, like, for sure. That's not to say they won't be able to, like, you know, take it even further, but, like, I guess then that circles back around to the question of, like, what even is a gaming console and what even is the point of owning a gaming console when, like...
Yeah, and even for games that look good, the hooks are now, like, kind of systems and how the systems interact. The Mordor series is all about, like, it looks great, obviously, but the hook that looks great, the hook is the
Nemesis
system with the orcs, yeah, and the Nemesis stuff. Yeah. And that's kind of it. There's not too many games, even like the kind of Destiny and its a million clones, they'll look great, but it's all about the kind of loot shooter loop that you're enjoying, that it's very much like, so you're putting all this money and time and, like, hyper realistic graphics, but when you shoot a guy, numbers pop out, you know, like, like, are we doing realism, are we not, like, and not that like it doesn't work, it works, but I think the only game that I really appreciated, like, graphics and was also a system game that great was the Titanfall series, which also has great systems involved too.
We should talk Titanfall also.
And that's the only game I've probably played. So I am very much interested. Also, speaking of this generation, the Nintendo Switch is basically like feasting on two full generations of games that can kind of run on the Switch now. Like Doom 2016 runs on the Switch well enough. It doesn't look quite as good on the Xbox One. I think even the frame rate's capped at 30. I think, but it's still,
at a certain level. I mean, you're playing exactly. It's good enough. It's exactly, yeah. And well, they also have. I mean, Nintendo has an. I actually don't quite understand what their strategy is, or if they even have one, because they have such an incredible back catalog, and they seem to be. I mean, that's a topic, I guess, for another program, because I don't want to go too much longer here, but. Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, like, a Switch, like, because the value proposition with Nintendo is always, like, you know, yes, they have cool new games coming out. They're always pretty fun with Mario and Link and Zelda and all that. But they also have all the old stuff. And, you know, the Wii Virtual Arcade was in some ways the best thing about a Wii. And there's nothing like that so far, to my knowledge. I mean, I know they're sort of slowly adding some stuff.
Do you have a Switch?
I do, yeah. Yes.
So there is, I think you have to have some level, I think I do pay for it. I think you can pay like $60 up front and just get it for a year or two. Mm-hmm. There is the SNES Virtual Console and the NES Virtual Console.
But it doesn't include the whole library, right? It's like only certain
titles.
It
includes like enough to get, like, kind of when you revisit like retro games, you kind of like just want to get the feel to a degree.
Sure, yes.
At least that's how I play them.
No,
like,
I hear you.
When
I go
back and play Mario Brothers, I'm not trying to do a perfect run. I'm just trying to like capture nostalgia, which I think is obviously like the Nintendo thing.
Yes.
And you know, I enjoy that well enough. So I think the Switch has obviously they don't have the whole back catalog isn't available. I think they're kind of they do the kind of Disney Vault kind of thing to a degree. but I think it's there. There's a lot. There are still a lot of ports. A lot of the Wii U games got ported to Switch very well. Basically, I think every Wii U game you would have bothered to play is on the Switch at this point, which is good because no one bought a Wii U. So
no, they didn't. I did not. Yeah, I missed the Wii U and the GameCube. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. It's an interesting. It's funny. Like the more this situation goes on, the more I feel like Nintendo really seems to have the best sense of, like, you know, what they are and what they're about and, you know, their whole strategy. It's occasionally infuriating because their shit literally never goes on sale. But, like, you know, it's also...
Yeah, and normally we kind of do these videos with, like, a strong endorsement or negative endorsement of Howard or a recommendation against whatever we're talking about. I think at this one, I think it's basically very much a wait and see kind of proposition.
Definitely.
I don't think we can say that you should get a new console. I think there's obviously also you can't, so there's that.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. That's the thing is, like, I mean, you know, what's the primary, similar actually to what I was talking about with the Nintendo, like the thing I'm most psyched about or I find the most interesting at this point about the PS5 is the, you know, the presence of this massive PS4 back catalog that you can play. I don't think I'm waiting to redo Bloodborne, waiting for apparently it hasn't. I saw something that technically it's not challenging, but they just haven't really updated the frame rate or anything yet. So I'll be holding out for that. Hopefully not too long, but like other than that, you know, everything you get to play and like, you know, essentially upgraded graphics. You know, it runs better and all the ways you would expect. So that's cool, but that's not really, it's not in and of itself a reason to get a PS5. And especially, even, you know, I was waxing about Soulstorm, and it was frustrating in kind of unfair ways and buggy in certain, you know, ways at various points, but overall quite good. And I like the series. I like the art. If you do, check it out. You know, you can get that on, they have a PS4 version, they have a Windows version, they have, like, it's a cross-platform release. So it's not like you really necessarily, I think the only thing that's a real exclusive in the true sense that has any kind of meaning would be Demon's Souls, which is a remake of a PS3 game. So it's like, all right, you know, I guess that's where we're at. I don't know. So yeah, definitely
yeah,
wait.
If I was
see.
To say, should you, for instance, buy a PS4 or 5, or put those $600 into Bitcoin or Ethereum, I would say just throw it into crypto and forget about it. Cause,
yeah.
And just buy two PS5s and
exactly,
you know,
so. Right. Just wait, right.
Or maybe not. Who knows? But like,
maybe lose it all. Yeah, no, I don't think you lose it. But yeah,
yeah,
this is not financial.
But like in terms of, yeah, it's not financial advice. I am, I am drunk and retarded. You know.
But yeah, no, exactly. In terms of whatever, you know, in terms of the economic calculation here, yeah, it's I mean, there's things about, I mean, it's definitely, like, I will say, you know, it's snappier. I mean, I never got the PS4 Pro, so I can't compare it to that. But, like, in terms of, you know, waking up from rest and snapping around and, you know, just the kind of UI and UX type elements, like, it feels like they perfected that side of things. It's what they wanted the PS4 to be, and the original, at least, PS4 kind of wasn't. It was, like, almost but not quite, and now they nailed it. So that's good, but, like, so what? You know, if that's not why you get these consoles to play games and, you know, have a good time, and you can do that on the previous generation. So, you know, yeah. Anyway, that's I thought it was interesting, you know, sort of good to take stock again and sort of see what the situation is.
Also, just for the insanity, it's been like, they've been out for almost 6 months now.
Yeah.
And stock is still.
I saw reports, so, like, you know, Taiwan Semiconductor is having issues, and I saw reports that were saying, like, expect this to last well into next year, if not all through next year. Which, you know, again, not to open up a new can of worms while we're finishing the program, but, like, then that starts to make, you know, given, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, people with, like, the, you know, like a 2080, 2080 Super, 2070 GPUs, like, you can live with, you know, at that point, it's like, well, why even bother, you know, I'll just wait another generation. I mean, it's not like you necessarily need to upgrade every year, every other year anyway. So, like, okay, well, this is just going to, I guess, be a lost GPU generation, maybe even a lost CPU generation. And who knows what's going to happen with the consoles. I guess, you know, supply is going to continue being tight. Hopefully it won't impact developers' plans to make something that's not just retreads of previous stuff, because...
Yeah. What... Or maybe it should, though. Maybe I think we're kind of due for a consolidation of, hey, this is enough power.
Sure.
You can make The Witcher 3 with this level of power. Maybe you chill out on...
Oh, that kind of side of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I also wonder how long... I think the tail of the previous generation will be quite long. I think you're going to see games coming out on both platforms for the usually it's been about a year until games go only next gen or only current gen. I think you're going to see a lot of back gen releases, and
sure
I think they're
going
to do very well.
Yeah.
I think also a lot of games franchises are in like kind of games as a service mode. Like Call of Duty Warzone is going to be on both forever, no matter how much it gets updated, because they're not going to want to hurt these user bases for these kind of games as a service.
No, they don't
want to
fragment that. Yeah.
So I would say there's just not strong incentive to buy right now, outside of maybe you can get one. And it's kind of like people are willing to go fight in Compton for these, so there is that.
They have a meme of Giga Chad. It's like, Giga Chad, did you go... You go beat up all these Negroes just to get a PlayStation 5? And Giga Chad's like, what's a PlayStation?
Dumb. Girls are dumb. They're so dumb.